With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. U.S. Bank wants to know how you reward yourself, because they have cards that make every day more rewarding. Are you a points hoarder, cashback guru, low intro APR lover? With U.S. Bank, it's up to you, because they have the cards to fit your lifestyle. So earn more whether you're shopping at a gas station or grocery store, even while planning a staycation. Learn more at usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast. Today is Wednesday, September 16th. I'm Jeff Erickson. I'm here with Jerry Donabedian from RotoWire.com. You can see Jerry all over the place when it comes to football season. Jerry does the hidden stats article he does at the RotoWire. He does streaming defenses. And there's one more article. You do another, like a matchups article at the end of the week, right? Right, Jerry?
Yeah, I do. I do the hidden stat line articles where I kind of look at breakdown like usage, and then I do streaming defenses on Tuesday, like start sit matchups on Wednesday and Thursday, and then Friday I do DFS. Yeah,
so four articles. I sold you short.
Busy week. It's definitely a busy week. Five actually, because the one of them is split into two. But yeah, busy week.
Yeah, it is. And well, there's a lot, you know. Like you, in your preface to the hidden stats, hidden stat line, your summary article, this is a huge week. Week one's huge, especially this year, because we had no preseason games, no mini camps, no OTAs. It's as much as fresh powder as we're ever going to have.
Yeah, I always think like, yeah, week one is the most new information that you're pretty much ever going to get, right? Like generally more is going to have changed in the off season, you know, between week 17 of last year and week one, then will change from week to week this year. Although, you know, if you have a bunch of running back injuries in one week, all of a sudden for like fantasy, it's mad scramble on the waiver wire, which we did see a little bit this week, but maybe not quite as much as last year.
Yeah. It's funny last year, it's funny that I didn't feel like there were too many enduring pickups. That, there was guys you'd use for a week or two and then, moved on. There weren't too many guys that you picked up, especially like running back. You couldn't find there was no Philip Lindsay last year, where it was a guy you picked up in week one or week two that you could use on a regular basis.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, last year, this year, the big week one pickups are like Malcolm Brown, Benny Snell, Nyheim Hines, running backs, which I think is the norm for fantasy, right?
Right.
But last year, it was like, it was mostly wide receivers and tight ends. And the biggest guys were like John Ross, who had like one more good game and then was either hurt or ineffective from, I think he had one more good game at the end, but by that point. And TJ Hockenson was another big one, and he had a huge week one, although he just did that again a couple days ago, and then did nothing. And then like DJ Chark was kind of like a secondary or tertiary pickup.
That's right.
And then he was like the one guy who was in like week one waiver columns, who like really ended up being a start throughout the year. And I kind of think like Miles Gaskin could be that guy this year. Like he has like some, like he's getting some attention, but overshadowed by other guys. And so I don't think he's going to be on DJ Chark's level of production, obviously, but I think that maybe there's a few guys like that this year, like those secondary waiver targets where you can get someone that can help your team throughout the year without, like, you know, the big fob that's going to be necessary for Hines or Snell or Malcolm Brown.
Right. I mean, maybe if you were lucky, you got Darren Waller in a thinner league. But, I mean, he was pretty much drafted, especially the later you got in to draft season. He was pretty much snatched up. I mean, he got plenty of buzz in draft season. So, yeah, not too many of those. All right, let's talk some big news items. There are a lot of wide receiver injuries, including the biggest one. Right off the top, Michael Thomas. He has high ankle sprain. At first, you're like, well, I'm going to play through it. I think I'll be all right. And now you're hearing reports that it's worse than initially thought. He's going to miss several weeks. You know, this happened very end of the game against the Bucs last week. Didn't really have a huge game. I mean, that happens with the top receiver. So I'm not really concerned about that, but I am concerned about this injury.
Yeah, that was rough seeing at the end of the game, like when they were up, I think, up 10 or 11 points, and there's like 2 minutes left, and I'm fine with like doing the trick play to Taysom Hill trying to score another touchdown, but like do it with Ty Montgomery and Traquan Smith on the field, not with Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara, right? Like, you want to keep playing football and score more points. Like, I'm not one of these purists who's going to say, oh, you should just kneel on it and run up the middle when you're winning. But like, take the reigning offensive player of the year off the field when the game is over. So, I mean, I feel bad for Thomas because, like, you know, he's going to probably miss a few games. He shouldn't have even been out there in the first place.
Right. And in that same game, also late in the game, Chris Godwin got hit, high hit to the head. You know, there was some concern he was looked at for concussion. Didn't show any symptoms Monday or Tuesday. Today, he gets popped into the concussion protocol by the Bucs.
Yeah, we know with the concussion, it sounds like, you know, it wasn't probably not too serious, but with the concussion protocol, it's probably always going to be at best 50-50, whether the guy is back for week two. And that'll be, you know, we already like kind of feel like, no, we can't trust the Bucs with injury info because they did, like, Mike Evans went from doubtful to questionable to playing like 95% of snaps.
Right.
So I don't know. Maybe it wasn't shenanigans. Maybe he just healed really fast. But to me, it seemed a little like they probably knew all along that he was closer to questionable or probable rather than doubtful.
Yeah, maybe wanted to like have the Saints let their guard down. Well, guess what? They didn't. Evans didn't really do much. You know, he was on the field a lot, but only got four targets. Did score that touchdown. Somehow got freed himself of Marshawn Lattimore, so he didn't get that direct coverage. But, you know, for the most part, he was not a main guy. And in fact, after the fact, you know, Bruce Arians like, yeah, we need to get him more targets next time.
Yeah. Between you've got like the squeaky wheel factor, you've got Godwin potentially out, and then you've got a Panthers team that already probably is a bottom five defense and their top cornerback, Dante Jackson. I think he practiced. I think he was practicing at least limited on Wednesday, but he was pulled from the week one game with an injury. So there's just a lot of things there where it's like you could see one of these like classic, like, you know, 17 target, 150 yard Mike Evans games. Although you do wonder with guys with the hamstring injury, it's like, you know, he's one slip away from, you know, pulling his hamstring again. So that is a little cause for concern. And we don't know Godwin's out yet. But I would think things are shaping up for a pretty good week for Evans.
Yeah, I think so too. And I want to see, you know, we want to see how he practices this week too. If Godwin doesn't play, I'm also kind of reasonably high on Scotty Miller, who got a decent amount of usage, showed some chemistry with Brady in week one. I think he's a guy too that against Carolina, well, you want anybody against Carolina. You definitely want, I think, Ronald Jones this week too, but I have him reasonably high in my rankings. I think all these things are something that we want to keep an eye on.
Scotty Miller looked really good. I have to admit, I didn't take him too seriously. He did kind of have some like deep league, dynasty league buzz all throughout the spring and summer. I know he's ran the really good 40 time. He's the guy who plays the slot a lot. But he looked really good. He was like the one person in Godwin looked good too, but in that Tampa Bay offense, otherwise they didn't look great. I thought Rojo looked pretty good too, but against that Saints defense, not a ton of room to run. And like you alluded to, everyone should have a little more space to work with against Carolina this weekend.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that matchup. If you got those guys, I only have Godwin, I think, in one league. I have no Evans. I have actually a couple of OJ Howard shares, but one of those is a dynasty league, and I'm very stubborn. But the other is two. I have some Ronald Jones, and I'm definitely starting Ronald Jones in places where I have him.
Yeah, you look at week one. Jones didn't have a huge snap share because they fell behind and they put LeSean McCoy on the field a lot. But like Leonard Fournette barely played. I think he played like 7-8 snaps.
Yeah.
And Jones had like 80%, 75% of the team's carries, and got a couple targets. So like it was really basically. It was the same breakdown that the Bucs had last year in the second half of the season, right? Where you have Jones as the lead guy, Dare Agunbowale as the passing down guy. It's now LeSean McCoy, but it's like the same role where they just pass and run a bunch of empty routes, don't get any touches. And then you have Leonard Fournette as like a very upgraded, very, very rich man's version of Peyton Barber. But it was the same role that Peyton Barber had last year, where he just like gets a few carries and that's all he does. And we saw Jones in that role last year be like a decent RB2 over the second half of the season. So for a home game against the Panthers, like, yeah, I've got a couple, you know, I wasn't excited to be using him last week and it didn't work out great, but I've definitely got a couple spots where I'm going to fire him up this week and I'll be pretty confident in it.
Yeah. How about Allen Robinson? News on him is, you know, well, it wasn't news. It was like, oh my God, he's taken all the bear stuff off his social media, off his Instagram and all that. And he was unhappy about the contract situation there. Hasn't got a contract extension, wants one. He talked to the press today when they asked him, did you ask for a trade? He wouldn't directly answer, but he did say he was right with Coach Matt Nagy. I tend to think this is much ado about nothing. Well, maybe not nothing, but it's much ado about something we can't worry about. If you have him, you keep playing him, and I like the matchup against the Giants, and that's a more controlling factor than his unhappiness.
Yeah, I think the good news is from what it sounds like it's hard to tell these things, but it sounds like his frustration is with the front office, that it isn't like, you know, it hasn't bled over to like, you know, things with the coach Nagy or with Trubisky, although I'm sure he doesn't love having Mitch Trubisky as his quarterback. But I think that in terms of like, you know, fantasy, he actually saw league high 5 targets, 20 plus yards downfield week one. He's got the Giants matchup. So I think he's going to do really well this week and in general. I'm sort of conflicted on if it did come to a trade, would I want him traded or not? Because it's like, it would be cool to see him with a much better quarterback. But I also think on the Bears, he's like, you know, he's in a really good position to see 150, 160 targets again. You go to a better team where like their second and third option aren't Anthony Miller and Jimmy Graham. You know, you might be looking at 7 targets a week instead of 10. Obviously, you would expect it to be more efficient, maybe more red zone opportunities. But yeah, I guess it really depends on like what that would be. But it seems unlikely to me that it would come to a trade. Like, I would think worst case scenario is just that he's kind of angry this season, plays it out, and then signs with a different team in the off season.
Right. And I think you're right. You know, it's very rare too that you see a guy get traded and he's very productive right away. I mean, Amari Cooper comes to mind as maybe a good counterexample of someone who did produce pretty quickly, but usually. It takes time to learn a new offense. And as you alluded, if you're going to a better team, chances are they have other interesting options. He's another guy on the pile. And I think of like, okay, the Niners, they could use another wide receiver. But, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo wasn't great in his own right on Sunday and wasn't great in the Super Bowl. He's missed some throws recently. I mean, is he better than Trubisky? Probably, but I don't know how big that margin really is.
Yeah, that would be like a team that one of the first that comes to mind in terms of a fit. And obviously like with the win now mentality, they would might be interested in trading. But yeah, like you said, Garoppolo is not that much better than Trubisky, and the Niners are, you know, they like to run the ball and they're pretty good at it. So like, yeah, that would be a place where, you know, I think he'd be going from like his 10 targets per game we see with the Bears to like maybe 7 with the 49ers. Although there is, you know, there's some impact of like, these things aren't totally, it's not totally flat. Like the Niners could say, oh, we have Allen Robinson, we're going to throw a little more now. But yeah, that would be an example, I think, where I would rather just, if I'm, have him on a fantasy team, I'd rather just keep him on the Bears and get those like steady targets from a bad quarterback.
Right. Speaking of bad quarterbacks, how about Phil Rivers? And it's weird. They're in one breath, people talk about him going to the Hall of Fame. Another breath, like, killed us in Survivor again this week. You look at some of like, I that was one of the first, rewatches I did. I do this every week where I rewatch the game afterward, like on Game Pass. Because, you can't see every play in real time. You have to you have to go back and go through things. And there are a lot of WTF plays coming from Rivers, including his first interception, which never should have been thrown. And the last interception, another really badly, bad decision, not just a bad throw, but a bad decision.
Yeah, he's kind of like the Eli Manning thing, where it's like I don't want to say he's overstayed his welcome, right? He's not so bad that you're like, oh man, this guy, has no place on. It's not like Peyton Manning, where he just like kind of all of a sudden just like couldn't really play anymore. But yeah, he's definitely declined. And I actually bet the Jags money line last week, because I mean, I didn't think they'd win, but I thought it was like, I think the line was 8 points. The Colts were the popular survivor pick.
Right.
And I just thought it was like, it seemed like pretty much an even quarterback battle. Jacksonville is home field. Colts have had pretty much everything else work in their advantage. But Minshew outplayed Rivers by so much. I do think going back home, Colts are going to be in a dome this week. We just saw the Vikings secondary just have Aaron Rodgers and those Packers receivers just do absolutely terrible things to them. So I think the Colts are going to be okay, but it was weird too to see like how much they threw in a game that was close throughout, right? Like I thought this team, like their offensive line, and I know Mac got hurt, but then you put Jonathan Taylor in, you might be better off. I thought it was interesting to see like how much they were spreading it out, how much they were throwing to Campbell, Hines, Hilton, the shorter passes. I thought it was going to be more of a power-oriented team this year.
Yeah, I think that they were taking what the Jags tried to give them, in so much that they, I think the Jags, were aware that the Colts would want to power it down them, and probably I think they schemed accordingly. And I think if you look at watching that game, the Colts moved the ball up and down the field. They did not have a problem with the ball. They just had some ill-timed turnovers. They missed two field goals in the third quarter. Blankenship had a tough – or no, not two. He missed one. It was the Bills that missed two field goals. They left a point, as they left a lot out there. Their second drive, they had a fourth and one. They ran Hines up the middle in kind of a jumbo-like formation. I'm like, I could have thought of like a lot of other things I would have rather done differently there. I don't mind the decision to go for it. It's just, again, running it into the pile with your lighter running back doesn't seem like a good idea.
Yeah, I think, there were a couple things. Well, in terms of like the way that they, they did run more of their spread offense with Hines. And then if you looked at the usage, like before Marlon Mack was injured, I think Marlon Mack took all of his carries before Jonathan Taylor took his first carry. So it's not like they were rotating really at the beginning, right? It was like Mack was the lead guy, Hines on passing downs, Taylor maybe came in a couple snaps. So I wonder if there's something they've seen in practice with Jonathan Taylor where they're like, obviously this guy's super talented, but I don't know if it's like a pass blocking thing. We hear that a lot with rookie running backs. It's a fumble thing. We've heard that with, and I think at this point for fantasy, it's like, I don't really care because they're going to put, now that Mack's gone, they're going to put Taylor in there, and fumbles. It's like, you lose what, 1 or 2 points. It's, I don't think they're going to bench Taylor for Jonathan Wilkins or anything. So like, yeah, I think Taylor is going to be great for fantasy, but I did just find that a little weird. It wasn't what I was expecting from the Colts. Like I'd understand if they'd gotten down two touchdowns early and needed to go hurry up, but it seemed like they just really wanted to like work Hines in those shorter passes. I guess it did mostly work. Mostly worked.
Yeah, it did. And Hines came in before Taylor too. And they used a lot of him. Mack was objectively good. He looked really good before the injury. I felt really bad for him. I do think you're right. You're onto something there that, maybe Taylor wasn't hitting the holes the same way Mack does or something like that. But eventually that would convert into something better, but, we don't know. you know, later on, Taylor did get a carry from the three, got to the two. The next play, they did this gadget play with Jacoby Brissett in there that lost a lot of yardage, because of course it did, because it was like super telegraphed. And you had a pretty good idea that, Brissett's in there. They're going to do some gimmick play with him running the ball. He's not going to throw the ball. Sure enough, he did. He lost like 6 yards. And then they brought Rivers in, and that's when Hines had the receiving touchdown right after that. But anyways, enough about the Colts. I do like the matchup against the Vikings this week. It's a debate to who gets well first, the Colts, Rivers and the Colts offense, or the Vikings pass defense, which got absolutely shredded by Aaron Rodgers. They revamped that secondary in the offseason. They lost Everson Griffin, no Danielle Hunter in this one. They're still kind of feeling their way around.
Yeah, they did. They got rid of all three starting corners from last year, which I think was a good move. Like, none of them was, Xavier Rhodes had been struggling for a couple of years now. And the other guys were just, mediocre, Trey Waynes and Mackenzie Alexander. So they did, but they didn't bring in any new veterans, right? They're now relying on the two guys they drafted. And then guys who have been like on the end of their roster. So it might be a good long-term plan, but there's going to be some growing pains probably. I wouldn't be surprised if by like mid-season it's secondary is in decent shape. Even with adding Nyakwe right before the season, missing, having Danielle Hunter out of the lineup is rough. I think in the Colts going back home, especially we know T.Y. Hilton is always much, much better indoors. So I think the Colts offense will get right. But I also think that their defense against the Jaguars did not play very well. And I do think the Vikings have a pretty good offense, so that could be a shootout there in Indy.
To that point, Gardner Minshew was 19 of 20 passing. James Robinson looked pretty good. I thought, and we're going to talk more usage stuff later on, but, the James Robinson versus Chris Thompson usage was very interesting. I think the consensus was, Thompson will be in on all passing downs, and who knows how well they'll be able to run. Thompson's probably the guy you want to start in a PPR league. I don't think I heard Thompson's name until the third quarter when I was doing the rewatch. Now, maybe he the play happened so quick and they moved, when you're watching like on Game Pass and you're watching the condensed version, you miss some of that sometimes, but it was, Robinson got a lot more usage than I expected. He was essentially a 2.5 down back.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're 100% right on that. Thompson had, I think, 2 targets. He played, I think, 24% of snaps, 25% maybe. And Robinson was up at 68%, which for a running back, I think that was like 7th or 8th highest of week 1. He ran almost as many routes as Thompson, mm-hmm. and he took literally all of the running back carries. They had Chenault took the, he had like 1 direct snap and 1 hand off the receiver. But yeah, I mean, based on the usage up from week 1, like if James Robinson is still available anywhere, I'd pick him up, because it was like you said, I thought it was going to be like a 50-50 thing with Thompson and Robinson. I figured Robinson would get a bunch of carries, but that he would lose some carries to Thompson and Thompson would get most of the targets. Instead, it was just like Thompson, he came in for like 3rd and medium, 3rd and long. But other than that, like Robinson was the guy. So it's probably not going to have a ton of touchdowns in that offense, but it was really the best you could have hoped for if you picked up James Robinson in terms of the usage. Now, in terms of the stat line, I think there's not going to be a lot of excitement because he didn't get a catch. He didn't score a touchdown. But looking toward the future, I think it was a very encouraging week for him.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Quick note before we move on from our friends at Owner's Box. Do you love the strategy of season-long fantasy sports? Live for the quick hit of DFS, then be the first to try weekly fantasy sports, WFS, from Owner's Box. Owner's Box is kicking off the 2020 NFL season in a big way by giving everyone 25 Owner's Bucks to try the game for free. In addition, Owner's Box will be matching users' first deposit up to $50. Weekly fantasy sports keeps players engaged through live drafting, social interaction, and a new layer of strategy that puts the power back in your hands. Compete with your opponent over 7 days of fierce competition and get paid out weekly. New public and private contests start every day. The Owner's Box game provides users with a fun and engaging rule set that revolves around a set number of game opportunities by roster position. Your players earn you points throughout the week, but only if you have enough games available at that position. Owner's Box allows users to engage socially in multiple different ways with the community. Add friends, create groups, and rank up to elevate the trash talk and competition to the next level. Sign up today to try weekly fantasy sports for free. But that's not it. That's each weekly fantasy sports contest you participate in will give you one entry into a signed Drew Brees jersey giveaway. In honor of the NFL season, Owner's Box will also be matching your first-time deposit of up to $50. Head on over to ownersbox.com/rotowire to claim your rewards and join the new wave of fantasy sports. I'm Jeff Erickson here with Jerry Donabedian. We are talking about week two. We're talking about hidden stats. We're talking about some of the injury news. Let's jump into the stats column here. Talk about usage and some of that. You did the hidden stats article. It's free on RotoWire this week. Check it out. You tweeted out a couple of times and I've retweeted it. First of all, what's your methodology for breaking all this down?
It definitely takes a good amount of time. Because the first thing we did, the backfield breakdown, which I think probably for fantasy is the most important, right? Like seeing how teams are using them, what kind of goal line work they're getting, the targets, the routes. So yeah, I basically just break down every team, look at any running back who got playing time, and then show the carries, what percentage of carries, same thing for targets, snap share, of course, and then for the routes. And then I kind of just comment on like any, you know, useful notes. So like for one example, it's like, you know, for, I think, you know, snap share over the past few years, I think some people have caught on to is like, that's a good indicator for running backs. But I do think that sometimes you need like a little more context with that. It's like Todd Gurley only got 46% of the snaps. So you might say, I'm kind of worried there. But if you look at it, he got 14 of their 18 running back carries. And you'd say, oh, he only got half the running back targets, but you know, five is still pretty good. But all five of the other targets that went to Ito Smith and Brian Hill were on the final drive, like in garbage time when they started to put some of their backups in, the Falcons did. So you just making notes of stuff like that to kind of give some context. It's like, you know, Gurley finished with 46% snap share and half the running back targets, but really when it was competitive, it was like he played like 60% of the snaps and got all the targets. And when he came off the field, they were throwing the ball to their receivers. And we've seen that sort of with like someone like Aaron Jones for the Packers. Like last year, except for when Jamal Williams was out, he never had like huge snap shares. But whenever Aaron Jones is on the field, getting him the ball is the priority. And whenever he comes off the field, that's when we see more targets going to the receivers and the tight ends. Snap share is definitely a good stat to be aware of. But trying to look at stuff like how many routes guys are running too, and you know where they're getting their usage. I'd say Malcolm Brown for the Rams is another guy where 60% snap share, pretty good. It's probably better than what most were expecting, but it's not great. But you look at, you know, when he was on the field and what touches he was getting. He was getting the goal line work. He was getting the targets. He easily led their running backs in routes. So really, they subbed in Cam Akers for some carries. But other than that, like, Malcolm Brown is getting all the high value stuff. Like those carries between the 20 yard lines, they're just not worth that much for fantasy. Targets are way more valuable. And of course, anything near the goal line is most valuable of all.
Right. And Brown objectively looked good too. It wasn't just that he got the usage. He did something with it. When both those come together, you got to be pretty excited, or at least maybe not excited, but at least convinced that, he could be worth something this year. And it's not just he's the veteran, he gets the first carry sort of thing. He actually earned it. He was the better, and we'll see when they got a fully healthy Henderson, whether that changes at all, but, he looks the part to me.
Yeah, he played really well. And right, it does. It definitely helps when, you know, it's nice to have the usage, but it's like, if you have the usage, but you're not doing anything with it, you're in danger of losing those snaps and those routes and those targets. Seeing that Brown, you know, outplayed Akers so easily, it's like you figure Brown, it's not solid there, right? Like it's a fluid situation. But Brown, I think, at least bought himself another week in the lead role. I think you can start him as an RB2 this week. Not a great matchup going to Philadelphia, but he's at least bought himself another week. If you're just lost, if you're one of the people who just lost a starting running back, or you drafted like a zero RB team and you're scrambling, I think there's a lot of appeal for Malcolm Brown, because you just kind of know that, okay, he's going to get a bunch of touches this week. Is he going to be able to hold off Akers all season? You know, I don't know. And obviously you mentioned Henderson, also a factor too, but for week two, Brown seems like a pretty safe source of touches.
Yeah, I think so too. I think the usage question that everybody is kind of most triggered on has to be Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. You know, that game was a blowout, 38-6, and it was 31. You know, Chubb, I don't think, saw the field in the fourth quarter after that fumble on the last play of the third quarter, but it was already 31-6 at that point. But it's true, though. Hunt came, you know, they were like, you know, Chubb didn't even get like full series. He had what, like 42 yards in the first quarter, has like a 20-yard run, and Hunt comes in next play, gets a 20-plus one of his own, and stays in the game, is in there in the goal line package and everything. It's just the same as last year, it feels like to me.
Yeah, it was. That was, and as a Ravens fan, I was like, that was the main game that I was watching.
Right.
It was still more Chubb than Hunt before the game got out of hand. And Chubb actually had a fumble, and then after that, he didn't get any more touches. Obviously, he's a guy who's not going to be benched beyond the current week for a fumble. He has a good track record and everything. Right. But at the time of that fumble, Chubb had a 10-7 carry advantage. But that's like, if you drafted Chubb in the second round, that's way too close to 50-50 for comfort.
Right.
And Hunt had a 6-1 target advantage for the game. Although interestingly, Chubb ran three more routes than Hunt. So it wasn't like they were, you know, pulling Chubb off the field every time they wanted to pass. But I do think it's sort of what we saw last year, that they throwing the ball to Hunt is like one of the featured parts of their offense, is that they game plan. Whereas Chubb is like, he'll catch a few dump off passes, but that's not really, he's not going to be the first read. So like a Kareem Hunt route is probably a lot more valuable for fantasy purposes than a Nick Chubb route.
I'd agree.
I would definitely start Chubb over Hunt this week. And they're in the Thursday game against Cincinnati, and it's definitely a good matchup, especially for the guy who gets more carries. But it's, yeah, you know, Chubb in the second round is not looking great now. But they're both great players. So it's hard to really argue with the coaching too much. You'd like to see Chubb maybe get a few more carries. But it wasn't like a total disaster scenario either. I think just keep in mind that the Ravens just destroyed the Browns, knocked them out of the stadium, and then Chubb did, other than the fumble, he did play well. The one thing, the Browns could not pass the ball. They could not stop the Ravens at all. They were sloppy on special teams. But the one thing they did do well was they ran the ball pretty well.
Yeah, they did. First play of the game, Chubb runs off an 11-yard run. He gets his reception on that same drive. I'm like, okay, this is going to be a decent game. And it really wasn't. The drive that most exemplified the Browns' day. They get down to like the Ravens 29, and this is when it's 10-6, so second quarter, still a viable game, and they go penalty, penalty, sack, penalty. Next thing you know, it's 3rd and 41, and you know they have to end up punting, and they end up getting the ball. You know, they had a great punt, got it to all the way to like the 1 yard line, and of course the Ravens rip off a 99-yard drive like it was nobody's business.
Yeah, this was, and I mean, obviously the Browns, disappointing, but I did kind of, as I'm biased as a Ravens fan, I guess, but it kind of felt like in the middle of last year when the Ravens were really like hitting their stride, there was a point where it was just like, you didn't get any, there was no takeaway from what happened when a team played the Ravens. Like they were just blowing out playoff teams by 30 points. Like they made the Texans look like a college team, and it wasn't, you know, the Ravens were just on a different level. Of course they completely collapsed as soon as they got to the playoffs.
Right.
Unfortunately, we're going to try to avoid that this year. I don't know really what to make of this for the Browns. I thought Baker Mayfield didn't play well, and I thought that their offensive line did play pretty well, and the backs played pretty well. The Browns defense is just, it's not equipped to deal with an offense like the Ravens. They're going to need to score more points, a lot more points, to be competitive.
Yeah. They also had some pretty key injuries. Greedy Williams was out in that game. that kind of rendered them, you know, a little bit more defenseless against the pass. They've got some, you know, both sides have some injuries for Thursday night, Bengals and the Browns. No Geno Atkins for the Bengals again. It's 2 weeks in a row without him. And that clearly showed up at the Chargers running game. Both Eckler and Joshua Kelly ran really well. But there was just a lot of things going on here like that, that you kind of, you know, goes a little bit under the radar.
Yeah. And I think with the Browns, you've got the additional challenge of, you know, a new coaching staff in a, you know, strange off season with not as much practice time. And maybe we'll see that with a few teams, although a couple of the teams like the Washington football team pulled off a nice, pretty, what ended up being by the end, a comfortable upset win with, you know, a young quarterback, and a new coaching staff. Although that, you know, I think most would say that was more of a Philadelphia implosion than a really Washington doing a whole lot to win the game.
Yeah. Well, that Eagles offensive line, it's a mess right now. There's two big injuries. They're scrambling to kind of put everything together. And it really tore apart that offense. And, you know, Wentz kind of made some mistakes along the way, too. He didn't handle it all very well.
Yeah, that's very interesting because, you know, throughout the whole Doug Peterson era, the offensive line playing at a really high level has been the consistent. They've had a lot of injuries at other positions. You know, the receivers have been at times good, at times the entire lineup's hurt. Same with like the defense. It's been on and off, but like the offensive line has been the one consistent. And now I think the defense looks pretty good this year. With Darius Slay at cornerback now, you've got a deep group on the defensive line still, but now like the offensive line has just totally imploded through no fault of their own, just injuries. I don't think Carson Wentz is used to playing behind a bad line. It's going to be an adjustment for him.
Right. So we went back and forth on this from a spread picking standpoint on the XM show today. But I took the Eagles because I expected them to be like the standard 3-point favorite. Instead, the Rams are a road favorite. But I don't feel very strong about the pick. It's one of those like, if I were an actual bettor, I would be, that would be a game I'd just pass by. I'd watch it, but, you know, I wouldn't be betting it.
Yeah, that's one because I'm always, my feeling is that with the Eagles offensive line injuries, you know, and facing Aaron Donald, I think the Rams have been a little underrated going into this year. But yeah, you do. I'm wary of like the what feels like a week one overreaction, because you're right. If you had set this line prior to week one, you probably would have said Eagles at home, like what, that's going to be like a 4-point favorite, right?
Right.
Granted, a lot, you know, what happens in week one does have meaning. And we've seen that the Rams have had pretty good injury luck so far. The Eagles have had terrible injury luck. So there are a bunch of factors there. But yeah, if that wouldn't be a line that I would target this week, like I don't really know what to expect there.
Right. One takeaway from the snap count portion of your article, the snap share, was Myles Gaskin. How much work he got. And it struck me too. He was clearly the best back of the three. Jordan Howard looked terrible. And Matt Breida was invisible in that game.
Yeah. So basically I think this summer, I think what we all expected was that Jordan Howard was going to be like the early down bruiser. He's going to get the goal line and he'd probably get about 60% of the carries. Right. And then Breida would get maybe 35-40% of the carries and most of the targets. And then what happened instead was that Myles Gaskin took that Breida role, right, with the targets, the passing downs, and about 35-40% of the carries. And what we thought was going to be the Jordan Howard role was instead like combined between Jordan Howard and Breida. Like neither of them saw any targets. They ran very few routes, didn't play a whole lot of snaps. So my take on it is kind of like, and I, you know, Howard, I think, did get sort of temporarily semi-benched. Like he didn't get any carries in the second or third quarter after he got off to a poor start. Then they brought him in and in the fourth quarter, and it took him three chances from the 1 yard line in a row before he finally converted the touchdown. But then we didn't see him again after that. I don't think they're just going to bury Howard and Breida after 1 week, but I think there might be some upside there for Gaskin to be a guy who gets like 10, 12 carries, 4 or 5 targets per week. I wouldn't necessarily expect it right now in week two. No. But, you know, especially on a rebuilding team, he's a young guy on a rookie contract. And Breeden and Howard, they're not really committed to beyond this year. So I think you're not going to be as comfortable. If you pick Miles Gaskin up, you're not going to be as comfortable starting him as you would be with Malcolm Brown, or certainly not as you would be with Benny Snell if James Conner were to sit. But I wouldn't be surprised at all if, like, mid-season, Gaskin is the most valuable of those guys and that he is the lead back in Miami.
Yeah, that he has some staying power with that there. I think that's a pretty reasonable take. Before we move on, I have to share one other quick note with our sponsors, Prediction Strike. Prediction Strike is a fantasy sports stock market on which you can buy and sell shares of professional athletes as if they were stocks. Ever heard someone say, "I've had stock in this player since day one"? Well, now Prediction Strike makes that a real possibility. You had stock in Patrick Mahomes his rookie year. You knew this would happen. Now it's a reality. Create a portfolio of all your favorite athletes and get closer to the game than ever before. To get started, simply visit PredictionStrike.com to create an account. Then deposit funds to buy, sell, and hold shares of your favorite players, just like you would real stocks. Each game is like an earnings report. If the player beats his projections, his stock moves up. It's that easy. You can trade your shares of players at any time, as long as the player isn't currently in a game. Get started today by visiting PredictionStrike.com and sign up with code ROTOWIRE to get an additional $10 with your first deposit of $20 or more. That's PredictionStrike.com. All right. I'm Jeff Erickson here with Jerry Donabedian. We're discussing his hidden shares, his hidden stat article. We're talking about snap shares for running backs, targets for wide receivers, routes run for wide receivers. Jerry, what were your top wide receiver takeaways from week one?
So a bunch of things there. One of the big ones was from Monday Night Football. Something that I had been watching with close interest because I drafted James Washington as my final few rounds pick. Yep. In a lot of leagues. He scored a touchdown, but he didn't really do much else, which was largely because he was clearly behind Deontay Johnson, who saw 10 targets, played about 86% of snaps, ran a route on nearly every one of Ben Roethlisberger's dropbacks. Meanwhile, James Washington only played in 3 wide sets. When they had 2 receivers and 2 tight ends, Ebron and McDonald, on the field, it was mostly Juju and Deontay playing, and then Claypool, the rookie, mixed in for a few snaps. He looked really good, by the way. That guy is a beast.
Yeah, that one pass along the sidelines where he posted and got the feet down, that was pretty sweet.
Yeah, so that's doubly concerning for Washington, right, is he's already behind Deontay Johnson and he's only playing in 3 receiver sets. And then he's got this guy breathing over his shoulder who's 6'4", 230 pounds, and runs a 4.4 40, and just played really well in his first NFL game. So it's discouraging for Washington, but encouraging for Deontay Johnson. He didn't have a big fantasy game, but to see him leak, had to get 32% target share, which was top 10 across the league, more targets than Juju. So he didn't get the touchdown, but I think based on the usage, you should be pretty excited with Deontay Johnson right now. I think I think based on that, it seems like the Steelers are expecting that second year breakout from him.
Yeah. That's funny. I also had James Washington as an end game pick in the NFFC where we have 20 man rosters, in part because of your Twitter exchange with him.
Yeah, James Washington is my best friend. How could I forget to mention that? Yeah, no, I mean, James Washington has I don't know if anyone's ever anyone else pays attention to this stuff. Maybe I just watch way too much football, but James Washington has a very short neck. And really long arms and legs. He's basically a 6'3" person, but with a short neck. And his wingspan is the same as an NBA shooting guard, even though he's only 5'11". So my point was how does it, it's been held against him maybe that he's not tall, but does it matter how you don't catch the ball with your head unless you're David Tyree, right? It doesn't matter how tall, how far off the ground your head is. It matters how far off the ground your hands can get, which you catch with. But anyway, none of that matters if you're losing snaps, Chase Claypool, right?
Right, right. Claypool was their first draft pick in the second round. So there's also that too.
And he's a conventional top tall guy with like the normal neck and everything. So
exactly. Julian Edelman only played 58% of his snaps. Now the Patriots, they really want to grind out games. They just want to run and run, and you know, a lot of misdirection. And we saw, you know, Edelman getting lots of rest in training camp too. He's kind of getting phased out a little bit. Not phased out, maybe is not the right word, but he's getting load managed.
Yeah, this was one that I'm like, I really need to see a week two here to see what the Patriots do at Seattle, because they did. They came out with this like, you know, unique game plan, which earlier in Brady's career, they would kind of do this. Like 1 week they'd run 40 times and the next week they'd throw 45 times. But the past few years, they kind of got away from that. They pretty much ran their spread offense. Then they would sometimes in certain matchups mix in more of the power stuff. But this was kind of like a Belichick throwback. Like it was a game plan that we'd never seen before, which I guess makes sense when you have Cam Newton, totally different style of quarterback. So on the one hand with Edelman, he only played 58% of snaps, whereas in like last year, he was usually up around at least 80%, sometimes close to 90 or 100. The good news is that he only on his 19 routes, which is a very small number, he was targeted 7 times. So basically, if he was running a route, they were throwing him the ball, which if you look at the rest of the receivers and tight ends on their roster, makes sense. So it's kind of one of these where it's like, okay, he's still a priority when they pass the ball. But how much are they going to pass the ball? Like, was this like a 1 week, you know, extreme game plan for, you know, a home game where they're a favorite and they jump out to a lead against the Dolphins? Or is this like the Patriots' new reality? Like, are they going to do as a 4-man running back rotation and they're going to pound Cam Newton 15 times and they're only going to try to throw, you know, 20, 25 times? Like, I don't know. It's, you know, with Bill Belichick especially, it's like, I could see it going either way. So it's something I'll keep an eye on week two. But in the interim, I'm like, I took Edelman out of any lineups where I had him week one. Like, my confidence is down. I'll say that much.
Yeah, me too. I do think your point, though, about seeing what happens week two is important, because, I mean, Seattle looks unstoppable right now. Now, granted, that was against Atlanta, which is they're the movable object right now. And we'll see. I think that against the Pats defense might be a lot different. But suffice to say, I think that they're going to have to throw more this week.
Yeah, that game will be really interesting too from the other side, because the Seahawks came out with like a really pass heavy game plan. And, you know, anyone who's been on like, you know, analytics or fantasy football Twitter knows that that has been a major complaint for a lot of people for like 5 years now. The Seahawks don't throw enough. You know, they need to let Russ cook. And in week one, I think they were second in the league in pass rate on first and second downs. Russ definitely cooked. Metcalf and Lockett both had huge games. So it'll be interesting to see, do the Seahawks keep up all that passing and do the Patriots keep up with all the running or not? You know, both teams kind of fall back toward the middle somewhere.
Yeah, that's the Sunday night game. So not really a big DFS game, although people will play the showdown format, I suppose. I can't do that. I don't like single game slates or two game slates or things like that. I need more games for me personally when I play DFS, but everybody is different on that, I guess. Before we let you go, Jerry, what's a game or two that you're looking at with a lot of interest for week two slate?
So I guess the Tampa Bay Carolina game, I think there's going to be just, you know, the Panthers defense, as we saw last week, is one we can consistently target. Although Chris Godwin was actually like the main guy I was interested in. So I'm a little bit, and then I'm like, do I really, you know, if he's out, then my confidence in Brady goes down a little. So that's one we'll have to keep an eye on. But I also think on the Carolina side, I think a lot of people seem to be down on DJ Moore, which seems odd for a guy who caught like nearly 100 passes last year. And he saw 9 targets week one. It didn't happen for him in terms of the points. But, you know, it's especially with wide receivers. Said it earlier, like great wide receivers have down games. And I think there's been overreaction in both directions where, and I'm guilty of it. I was like, I don't, maybe Davante Adams can break the receptions record Michael Thomas set last year. It's not the wildest thing ever, but it's probably just me overreacting to week one. Like, he's same role, same team and all that kind of thing. So yeah, the Tampa Bay Carolina game. And then in terms of DFS, I'm really interested in the Arizona Washington game. Mm-hmm. Washington was, at least in week one, came out with a more like aggressive offensive plan than we saw last year when they were kind of just handing off to Peterson over and over again. In Arizona, we saw them throw the ball in what was a close game. I think they threw the ball 45 times, plus Murray had a bunch of scrambles. They easily led the league in no huddle rate. And Washington also moved at a pretty decent pace when they were on offense. So I think that could be a game where we get high snap volume. I think we're going to see Terry McLaurin bounce back from a pretty quiet week one. And I'm partially based on the usage and partially because I think he's actually pretty decent. Logan Thomas, the Washington tight end, he played almost 80% of snaps last week. He led the team in targets. And he's facing Arizona defense that, as we know, has struggled to cover the middle of the field. It was last year was tight ends, and week one it was running backs. Raheem Mostert, obviously, right, with that long catch. And then Jerick McKinnon also had himself like a nice little game with a few catches. But yeah, I think for like, especially for DFS, I think that Arizona Washington game is going to be really interesting.
Yeah, might bode well for Antonio Gibson too, who only had 11 touches. Maybe he's a little bit more active this week instead of just running Peyton Barber into the pile 17 times. I don't know. Seems like that would be the plan.
Yeah, Barber, he had the two touchdowns but did nothing else. And then JD McKissick, I think he had -1 yard on his touches. Like that right. seemed, and that's one of those where the if he keeps getting outplayed by Gibson, how long is he going to keep his role? We know Gibson's a converted wide receiver, so he can probably handle himself all right on that third down role, I would think.
That's what I would think, too. All right, cool. Well, anything else you want to, so remind everybody what you're working on, what's coming up next, your schedule, so people know what to see.
All right, so coming up next, the last two things I write for RotoWire this week. Thursday, we'll have Exploiting the Matchup, Start Sit. Running through a lot of the stuff we just talked about, some like spots where guys who are sort of like borderline, in and out of your lineup type players or guys who people might have waning confidence in them, looking at the matchups for whether, that determines whether you might start them or sit them or even stream them if they're available on waivers. And then every Friday morning, I post my DFS tournament guide, which is geared toward DraftKings and geared towards tournaments like big, large field, high payout tournaments. But there's also some stuff in there that's good for cash games. And that also does kind of build on the stuff that I do throughout the week with usage and matchups, sort of putting it all together and looking at some really good like stacking lineup options for DFS.
Looking forward to it. Should be a lot of good stuff there, folks. Make sure you check it all out. Make sure to also follow Jerry on Twitter at Jerry Donabedian. Again, thanks everybody for listening. Tomorrow we got John and Mario, as always. Thanks for listening to RotoWire. Have a great day.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.